Welcome to the Draw Doctors Podcast, your weekly dose of fantasy footy content.
Yeah.
Happy New Year and welcome to the Draft Doctors, your home of all things AFL Fantasy and Supercoach Draft all year round. We're kicking the new year off in style with our fantasy face-off, going head-to-head for some of the biggest matchups in draft that you've suggested to us. Players that you just can't split, but we've taken our sides and we're going to battle it out. John Travolta versus Nick Cage style. I'm your host, Doss, and enjoying a harvest lane or two across the festive season. Happy New Year, Stevie Fears.
Cheers, Dawson. And of course, Happy New Year to all the listeners out there. And yes, the longer we take to get the show underway, the more harvested I become.
But we do have Cam McLaughlin here as well. He loves this episode as he is a master debater. Welcome to you.
Yeah, g'day. I'm pumped for this. And I really think I'm pumped for three things. One, I think Doss and I are coming in as significant underdogs here, and so if either one of us topple the Fizz, I think it's a victory for the people. And two, Steve can't sit in the fence. He is obligated to take a side. And three, I can't entirely recall, but I think there might have been a few cheeky punts placed in this episode last year, and I won't be surprised if there's a couple of punts placed again this year.
Okie dokie. Well, let's get into the fantasy face-off. First, a shout-out to the people who contributed through their ideas to us on Twitter and Facebook. We'll get to some of those that missed out a little bit later. But we have picked some of the hottest topics or players that we have the strongest opinions about for our duels. Now, all picks here are just in the AFL fantasy format, and this is purely a versus battle. No draft capital comes into it here. So it's your next pick. And you're after one of these two dudes, and we're going to start with Dangerfield versus Canelio. Steve, who wants to go first? One's got Danger, one's got Canelio. Cam, you have Canelio, not the cat. Surprising.
Yeah, Steve, you take the floor. I'm pretty keen to listen to your Danger take.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting just taking one of the most safe players going around last 4 years. Played at least the 21 games. And as we know, boys, your best ability, it's your availability. Very healthy man, the old Danger, despite the fact he likes playing up as though he's got a splinter and that might cost him a month. He's not missing any of those games. So he averaged the 107 Dream Team points last year. And, 15 tons in 2018 out of 21 games, 14 tons out of 21 in 2019. Very consistent numbers, about two-thirds of the game. You're getting a nice ton. Was slightly better in 2018, but he showed some more pop in 2019, had some more 130-plus scores. He did have a 30 in one game, so with one of those, fake injury games, carrying on like a general cat would. And the reason I like him is, before Tim Kelly came into this team, he was a 120 averaging player. So you've lost the 22nd ranked player in the AFL for contested possessions a game, a guy who kicks goals from the midfield, a guy who lays tackles and generally just takes a lot of fantasy points, takes a lot of that good midfield time. So I think Danger can get a bit of a bump. I know he didn't get forward status, but you got to get 35% forward status to get it for fantasy. So I think he can just play more pure mid. If you look at the way the Cats recruited, they really did try to boost their forward line. They brought in Josh Jenkins. They brought in Jack Stephen. I know Jack Stephen can play midfield as well, but I think, given how much footy he's missed, I think it's unlikely that he's going to be spending the bulk of his minutes in the midfield. I think there's going to be a pretty healthy split there. I would assume Joel Selwood goes back in there as well. But the big problem for me is that Steve Canelio is actually a bit of an unknown. Love the player, think he could be a super value, and this is probably where draft capital comes into it. I think you could probably actually end up with both of these players in your draft if things worked out around the turn or what have you. Steve Canelio, we know he missed some games this year, missed 7 home and away games this year. 2 years ago, missed the bulk of the season, only played 7. And that's fine. Not great, obviously. Does bring in some risk. But the problem for me is we actually don't know how he's going to perform within this team as a whole. And I'll show you why. Callum Ward missed basically 2019. Steve Cornelio did miss, like I said, five games. Josh Kelly missed a handful of games. Lockie Whitfield missed a handful of games. Toby Green missed a handful of games. Zach Williams missed games. In fact, those guys, oh, we'll leave Ward out of it, but those five guys only played one game together this year. That is startling, right? That is startling. And that was round six against the Swans. Cogs kicked four goals to get to his 115. And I know that's in his range of outcomes. Very good player. Can score by possessions, marks, tackles, goals, whatever. Love him. But we just, you know, internal competition matters so much. And I'm really concerned when you bring Ward back into this team and Matt DeBoer and all these guys, that the scores just might not be there for a guy like Cornelio. I know he can score like that. That's fine. But when you add in the risk of them, you know, he's got the knee issue, like history of the knee issues, the team that we don't know how they're going to divvy up the scores, what role he's going to play. He can go forward. Like, that's in his game. Like, he can do everything. I'm just worried about how it's going to go, whereas I know what I'm going to get out of Danger. And I mean, tell me if you're going to the trade table that Dangerfield's never going to be worth more than Cornelio. He's always worth more.
Maybe. Well, I mean, look, all really good points. And I actually think this one's going to be super close come the end of the year. I think Danger will probably get the edge in Supercoach. And it'll be way closer in AFL Fantasy. They can both probably go 115 plus, but I think the jump that Cornelio has to make to get there is smaller than the jump that Dangerfield has to make to get there, if that makes sense. So I just want to quickly read you some stats. So since 2014, only six midfielders have gone back-to-back 110 plus in AFL Fantasy. It's McRae, Gaff, Titch, Dangerfield, Zerett, and if we eliminate Cornelio's zero from last year, Cornelio slips into that as well. In the same period, only two players have scored 110, dropped below it for a period of time, and then returned to 110 plus. Want to have a guess who those two players are? It's Rocky and Gary Ablett. Right, so no one else has ever come back to 110 plus since 2014. And so you've had Danger, who's gone from, you know, his 120s, and he was awesome in 2016 and 17, like just a beast of a player. Now dropped below, reaching his 30th year in the world, and, you know, expecting him to then reach the highs of his 2016, 2017 years, I think might be a little bit of a stretch. The other side of it is that I'm really big on players hitting their fantasy stride when they turn 27. Like, usually they go, their peak is between 27 and 29, and then they start maybe a bit of a decline. And there are obviously a few outliers in this, but some examples of this, of the 27-year peak, Josh Kennedy turned 27 in 2016, went career high. Dangerfield, 27 in 2017, went career high. Nat Fyfe turned 2017 in 2019, went career high. Dane Zorko turned 2017 in 2016, and bang, leaps 15 points on average. So there's like a history of the top scorers in the game hitting their fantasy peak at year 27. Cornelio turns 27 in 2020. That has me so pumped that he can actually build potentially, you know, an above 110 score. And to get there, he only needs to improve slightly. Like, it's a one kick a game thing, and he's there. And talking about kicks, he's actually a massive kicker of the footy. Like, that's how he builds his score. He was ranked 13th last year for kicks per game across the AFL, and sixth for the sixth best kicking midfielder. I really think that there's an opportunity there for him to take his game to another level, whereas I think Dangerfield maybe he's got all the opportunity, but I think maybe the competition might be a little bit stronger than it was in 2016 at the Cats in the midfield.
Well, but it can't be, because you've just lost Brownlow medal chance Tim Kelly. You know what I mean? Like, that's gone. He's out.
That's, yeah. And so I totally
is what I'm saying is, like, Dangerfield doesn't need to improve. He doesn't need to be 112. Right? if you look at Greater Western Sydney, okay, you've got Lachie Whitfield, 110 plus, Josh Kelly, 110, Canelio, you know, arguably 110, Taranto, 116 or whatever it was. Like, those guys didn't play together. That's what I mean. Like, we haven't seen what these guys are going to do across the season together. Who drops? Someone has to lose.
Definitely someone has to lose. And so I take your point around.
And you're adding like a top 10 contested possessions player in the AFL in Callan Ward. And I know Callan Ward's not going to be the same Callan Ward, but
yeah,
it's a consideration.
And like, I totally get that Tim Kelly was awesome, right? And so he loud and clear, great contested player, kick goals, all that sort of stuff. But in 2016, when Danger, oh, sorry, 2017, when Danger scored his best, absolute best fantasy scores, they had people like Parsons, Ruggles, Murdoch, Josh Cowan, Corey Gregson, and Darcy Lang taking stints in that midfield. I just, you know, that I don't think they're even listed anymore. They just weren't good.
How's Joel Selwood's 2016 form to what he's doing now?
Yeah, absolutely. He's regressed, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And you've taken out Tim Kelly from that team as well. And Mitch Duncan's injured as well now.
Well, I'm not looking too much at that injury, to be honest.
And Gary Adler's not playing any midfield.
Yeah. And where I think we differ is, I think Jack Stephen is actually going to play bulk midfield.
Nah, no way, man. No way.
I totally think he will. So that's interesting. Like, I think all of that hinges on that Jack Stephen move. I agree with you.
I think Canelio can outscore Danger. I just think you've got a lot of risk on your plate. Whereas Danger's a very safe pick.
Yeah.
And I want a bit of safety at the top of my draft. Like, if I take, say I take Canelio, like, and realistically, he shouldn't be a round one pick. Based on what he did last year, maybe the savvy players will take him pick 10 or pick 11 or what have you, and in those drafts, that's fine. That's going to happen. I just think it might affect the way you draft after that.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting. Like, not this was a really hard one not to look at draft capital, because they're both, you know, in that round one contention slash turn, and so you kind of have to consider it. But yeah, I see both sides, and I think it's going to be bloody close.
I put it this way: if Canelio outscores Danger, how much is it by? It's by 5 points a game.
I mean,
six.
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, if he goes more than that, then you're saying that someone is going to really have a bad year, like, well, going to really fall off a map, like Josh Kelly or a Whitfield or Taranto is going to really come back.
Right. Right, and I actually think that is for Taranto.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
All right, well, I think that battle's finally over. I don't know who won that one. Probably Steve. But, Cam, you know what? You probably should have just defended. It should have been Dangerfield versus George Hall and Smith, because he just turned 27. Career year next year.
You heard Look it here out. First.
All right, well, we'll get on to our next matchup, and it is James Sicily versus Sam Doherty. And Cam's still in this one again. He's defending the one, the only James Sicily. I'm taking Sam Doherty's back, and I'll kick it off to give you a little break there, Cam. Have a little breather. And I'm just, what should I start with? Should I go from the positives of Doc or the negatives of Sicily? I'm just not too sure, but I'll start with Doc. Listen, Cam, Sicily's played 22 games just once in his career, okay? So 2019, and that is it. He doesn't have that greatness gene in him like Doherty. Doherty, a captain, a leader, a man who still rocks a beautiful comb over despite the early signs of broadbent regression. He's also a man who doesn't get riled up by Jed Lamb, Cam. So this is what I want to talk about, though. Consistency is where the old Doherty was elite. And we know he's had two ACLs since the 2017 season, so I'm fully aware he's a different man. But funnily enough, despite Doherty's range of outcomes being enormous due to the game's played factor and the time on ground factor as well, I think you're just going to be happier week to week picking up your Doc. And we aren't talking about draft capital here, so I've got no problem just saying I'm going to be happier and more comfortable having Doherty in my team coming back than Sicily. Sicily, his first 10 games, 94 AFL fantasy average. His final 12, 75. He has just not consistent over his career. The first, he's just never done it, man. He's absolutely never done it. If you think Sam Doherty can't coexist with Newman, Simpson, and Petrevski-Seaton, that's an argument as well. You're forgetting Daisy Thomas was also there last year. He had 20 disposals and managed 5 marks and 3 tackles a game as a washed-up vet. I think I'd set the early return for Doherty's his floor at around 80, and I think generally that can be higher, and his fitness will improve through the games, and that's just his floor as well. So if he comes back as the 2019 version of Doherty, if that's a 20% worse than 2017 Sam Doherty, and then we take an extra 5% off for the way the games changed, that's still an 88 average, better than every single year that Sicily's done, bar that one where he only played 14 games. Just a lot more happy with Doc. Don't care that he's coming off the injuries. He's just a big dude. Racks up marks. Just does it all for me. Cam, you want Sicily in your drafts. Tell me why.
So you're done? Okay, good. So, for now. So, there's a couple of things that I want to say, just sort of leading in on the positive side for Sicily. I actually think it's really simple from a Sicily perspective. The Hawks had a really big problem in 2019 and were completely exposed from a key tall perspective in defense. James Sicily comes in relatively short, almost a midfielder size, you might say, at 186 centimeters tall. And he found himself taking on some of the game's best forwards at times through the year. Now, Doss, this is where your front and back half split comes a little bit undone, in that when he played in the role of a key defender, he put up those putrid 40s and 50s and was pure stank, and I totally agree with you. But even with those games, it still brought his average down to a respectable 83.6 and 93.8 Supercoach. Now, here's where the hype starts. He won't be playing this role in 2020. They recruited the inferior Frost in the offseason, the superior Frost obviously being Sam Frost, and he has come out and said that he'll be playing as a key tall in defense. Yes, absolutely. So now if we look at the games where Sicily was able to play as that intercepting defender role last year, he averaged a monstrous 107 AFL fantasy and a monstrous 116.9 super coach. No one needs to look at a back and front half split. You need to look at the role split for this one. And it's stark. So I found it really interesting that you talked about, you know, Sicily missing a lot of games, because Doc has missed 2 entire full years. There's something around the ASL that ACL that I just want to investigate a bit more. So, leading sports medico Dr. Peter Larkins says that the evidence to suggest an AFL player should return to the same elite level post-surgery is 5 to 7 times more likely to pop his good ACL than before his first injury. The same report says that the risk of re-rupturing the same ACL increases between 15 and 25%. Now, Doss, I want you to just quickly, I know it's putting you on the spot, but I want you to name me one player who's done their ACL, even once, and returned to some form of fantasy relevance, or even better, reached their previous averages. The only one I can think of is Dan Menzel, and who gives a shit about Dan Menzel?
Yeah, Cam, I cannot do that on the spot, as you may imagine, but I don't think the ACL argument is certainly something that you need to take into account. Obviously, that's the biggest thing we need to take into account with Doherty. He's coming back from 2 years off. But I'm happy. I've seen some footage, Cam, and I'm happy with the way he's moving. I don't really care about that when, if you're drafting Sicily and you get what you get last year, and I know your argument about Sam Frost, but what deal is it? It's Sam Frost, isn't it? You said
is it Sam
superior.
Frost?
I think his name's Sam Frost, is it not?
Shit, I thought it was Jack Frost.
It's Sam
Jack Frost.
Frost
used to play for the Lions, didn't he?
That's why I was like, what's he on about?
And Magpies, yeah.
Yeah, whoops, that's the wrong guy. But Sam Frost, and I was talking about the superior Sam Frost, of course, being the attractive woman, Sam Frost.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm sorry, just on the ACL, Nick Malcheski.
Go on.
Gold Coast Gold Coast legend, Nick Malczewski.
And was the argument he returned
came,
back to
he
best.
Came into the year as the number one Dream Team defender 1 year.
There you go.
Before or after the ACL?
After.
How many years after?
Yeah, it was a few.
How many ACLs?
Adrian Peterson won the NFL MVP off an ACL.
Oh, here we go. Is Adrian Peterson take coming out again?
He also beat his son, so, you know.
Wow. That's a Jesus. Wide range of outcomes, Steve.
Might have given him some special powers. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll just quickly touch on the Sam Frost thing, though. Like, Sicily, third in the AFL in intercepts last year, and his second best player was down Blake Hardwick at 55th in the AFL. We're talking about Frost coming in. He was the 12th best in the AFL. So you're not wrong in that he will be coming in there, but Sicily was the third best interceptor. So, I mean, if you're adding an extra competition in there for that sort of things, like, we're talking about Doherty returning to a team and people are worried about his competition down back as well. That's another talking point when it comes to Doherty, is that the team's a lot stronger. Doherty, when he last played that GOAT 2017 season, he had 139 intercepts, which made him at around the 22nd overall. So you look at Sicily, the third overall this year. Doherty was the 22nd overall. And the next player down there was Cade Simpson at 49th and Lockie Plowman at like 50-something. So I'm just saying, like, Doherty is not going to need to be that guy down back for Carlton as well. And I think you're going to see Doherty have that exact same fantasy-friendly role. They're not going to make him come back and lock down people. He's just going to be roaming around there, getting plus six marks all day long. And we do see that Doherty had ridiculous amount of marks in 2017. There's just no way he's going to replicate 9 marks a game. But, I mean, Daisy Thomas had 5 down back last year. If he gets, he can be better than Daisy Thomas, even after 2 ACLs, in my opinion. I reckon he'll still get you 6-7 marks a game. And, you know, it wouldn't shock me if he outdoes what you think he's going to do. I mean, what do you think he's going to average, Cam? Say him versus Sicily right now. How much better do you think you're going to get out of Sicily?
To be honest, I don't think for me it comes down to an average battle. Like, I think it for me it comes down to, is he going to play the full year? And am I going to have him in finals? And I can't... You can't predict an injury, right? But for me, I'd feel much safer having Sicily in my team and committing to, even if he goes 85, or even if he goes 90, or even if he goes bloody 80, if he's in my team come finals time, I've got that average defender, and I'm happy with that. I think Doc may miss at that point.
Yeah, that's fair. I just think the risk of having a Sicily up and down season, regardless of how it happens, I think there's so many ways it can happen. You're saying it's one thing that's going to happen that's going to make him suck. Like, as we know, he can swing out, get annoyed at people. Jed Land can shut him down for a game. I think you'll see more people targeting him than just Jed Lamb. Like, you're going to have a few more people targeting him this year if he's going to be that guy. If he starts racking up, like you're saying, he's going to get attention. Doherty can handle that. He's an old vet now. He's a gun. He's their captain. And he won't get shut down by Jed Lamb.
His fieriness is not new. That's he's been the same way for a couple of years. Teams aren't going to miraculously come out and start targeting him like that, because they would have done it already, I believe. I think, you know, if you do want to bring it down to an average play, and it is about that key defender being Sam Frost, like, he's come out and said it. He's not there to be an interceptor. He was at Melbourne. He's going to be their tall timber down back. I think that's probably enough. I think the 107 average and 116 super coach is not likely, but man, that has me really excited for when he doesn't play that role.
Steve, what do you think on this one?
Oh, I'm going to side with Cam, but, like, I think the problems you're talking about, Doss, and, like, not to be unfair, but, like, the Jed Lamb thing, that was over
2 years ago.
Yeah.
3 years ago.
That was a little while ago. And the other problem I have is Carlton... In 2017, they took 104 marks per game. They took 90 this year. Like, they're a different team, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah. They're still a top 6 marking team, though, in the AFL.
Yeah, I understand that. And that's fine, but that doesn't mean they haven't lost 14. They're a ninth.
What about the fact that... out of the Hawks, it's probably not going to shoot down there so much out of the midfield. They were 17th for clearances if we're playing the overall stats game here. So with Tom Mitchell back, do you think they're going to be 17th in clearances?
Noted defensive player, Tom Mitchell.
Noted clearance player.
Yeah, it's not a bad point. The thing is, if you look at what Statesman always told me, it was that the shitty defenses are the ones where the defenders can't score. The Hawks were the best defense in the AFL last year. And they've arguably gotten better. I don't know. Sam Frost is, I don't know. I don't care for him as a player. But I think it means Sicily's freed up. They clearly want that to happen.
Yeah.
Like they tried Ben McAvoy. They tried their best ruckman. They're trying to free him up that much.
Yeah, I mean, I went probably stronger than the way I feel about this one, to be honest, to try and make the argument stronger. But I'd be happy taking Doherty, especially. I don't think I'll be happy taking him on draft night because the position I think he'll go is just way beyond where I'd ever take him. But if we're just talking like an average battle and we consider Doherty's going to be healthy, which again is just going to be a hard ask. But if we consider they both play the same amount of games, whatever. Like, I think I'm going to be comfortable drafting Doc. And I think in the back tail end of the year, if he does stay healthy, those scores are going to start rising and it's going to be exciting.
I think the one thing to consider with Doc that maybe isn't being talked about at all, because everyone's sort of reliving the heyday of, you know, he was playing this like awesome role of half back. You know, before he got injured last year, he was moving to the mid.
They're not going to put him in the midfield, man.
They won't, though. Yeah.
They won't. But, you know, it questions the role. Like, what role is he coming back to?
Yeah. I honestly can't believe the things I'm hearing, like where people are comfortable taking him. Like, pick him in salary cap. That's fine. That's not an issue.
Yeah.
But I can't get behind the top five talk.
No.
I just find it. He's not going to score 110.
Wait, was that top five overall?
Like for defenders.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's tough.
I mean, if you want to do that, that's fine. I couldn't do it. Anyway,
no.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
Let's get on to the next matchup. It's Buddy versus Andrew Brayshaw. And the man not backing Andrew Brayshaw for once, it's not Stevie Fizz. I'm taking Andrew Brayshaw. Steve, you've got Buddy. And maybe you can kick this one off with why Buddy is better than Andrew Brayshaw.
Yeah, I mean, and look, how bad was Buddy Franklin in 2019? My God, the man could hardly move. He was struggling. He missed a bunch of games. It's the worst average he's had since 2006. 2006? You were like 40 in 2006, Doss. And guess what? He still averaged more than Andrew Brayshaw. So, look, and this is the funniest thing. Buddy only played 10 games. And if you said my concerns with Buddy are health, I would say that is fair enough. I don't have a beef with it, but he has been reasonably durable before this season. He played 18, 22, and 22 home and away games the three prior seasons. That's pretty good return, if you ask me. So despite only playing 10 games, and Brayshaw, was it 22 or 21 games last year, Doss? 22?
Not sure, 22.
Yeah, so they had the same amount of 100 scores and the same amount of 80 plus. That's all we're asking from you, Andrew Brayshaw. 80. And you couldn't give it to us more than a guy who only played 10 games, right? How ordinary are you? And we're not asking. All we're asking Buddy is to be his 2018 self. Like, Brayshaw has to take a massive leap, right? He has to take a massive leap, devoid of outside skills and with the best inside midfielder in the game. Like, what if he's on a wing? Like, Fremantle have lost wings. Like, this is in his range of outcome. They've got superstars like Nat Fyfe, Michael Walters, Reece Conker taking those inside midfield roles, right? Locked up players, man. And you know, Chera could get the spot over him. We don't know what Justin Longmuir is going to do. Like, this is in his range of outcomes. He has to take a 20-point leap to get to 89. That's a lot of meatballs. Buddy, you know, he still has it. He's not washed up. He owned those West Coast Eagles, didn't he, Dossie? You know, dropping 117, taking Jeremy McGlovin to the cleaners, five snags, no big deal. If Buddy's your F2 or 3, you can afford some boom bust, because that's what you're going to get with the great man. He's going to give you a bit of bang, a bit of, you know, a couple of bad scores every now and again, but he's going to give you the week winning. Unlike old Andy Pandy Brayshaw, could be rolling around with 82 every week, just chutting up your team, if you pardon the expression. Like, that's a problem if he's your F2 or F3, depending on where they go in your draft. And there's one last thing I want to talk about, and that is fantasy football should be fun, right? Should be fun. If you've got the big Bud Wah in your team, you love watching him, don't you? You've got the great man out on a lead, just banging goals in from the boundary line from about 70-odd metres out, because that's what he does on a routine basis. You've got these enigmatic players. You are watching that game. You are tuning in. It's on the edge of the seat stuff. I had Gary Ablett Jr. 2 years ago, and it was the best fun I've ever had. It's the only time I've ever owned him, because he's always old busted. He just fell to me in the draft. It was a great thing. Had a great year, and I loved watching him play. The great man, Buddy. He's fit and firing at the minute. He doesn't have to do anything except just be himself. And he's going to absolutely pants the inferior Brayshaw.
Jeez. Stevie coming out absolutely hot. He's been drinking that Bud Light, seeing some shredded pictures of Buddy in the preseason there, I can see. It's funny how you're talking about 2 year ago, Buddy, and it's just going to happen again in 2020, Steve. I really like that take from you, just like we'll expect... Again, Joel Selwood, who was 2 years ago averaging 95, and you're going to expect that again in 2020, Steve? I thought you said you weren't going to do that now.
Well, one player's a real deal and one player's a total fraud.
All right, so the one thing against, major thing against Buddy, Steve, you're saying he's not washed up, but he's just so old. He is just so old. He's 33 this coming year. Are you saying that he's going to be all right to go for next year? That contract is rancid. So... If we consider he's going to get four more kicks a game, Steve, right? So that's pretty much what he was averaging the year before, what you're saying. No, that's how many kicks he was averaging, but he was also kicking more goals. He'd average around 82 and a half. So leaving all the stats the same, unless you think he's going to improve in basically every area, which it sounds like you do if you're putting his average up at around 86 or 87 or whatever you thought it was. 82 and a half, easily going to bang that out for Brayshaw this year, and he's going to push well above that. More mid-time is the argument. You're paying out Andy Brayshaw for not playing well. That's because he didn't get the mid-time that we're talking about. New coach, new direction, finally hashtag Mundy out. Hopefully Conker out as well, which we all hope so. But he has to play more mid-time now. It's time. He's been in the league. This is his third season coming up, third-year breakout. He returned from that horrible injury in his rookie year when Gaff broke his jaw and they didn't give him that heavy burden in year two, perhaps to settle him back in after that traumatic experience again. But that brings us to his time on ground. Extremely low time on ground and not due to fitness as well. He is a very good runner. He's not Clayton Oliver from year one to year two, that podgy that he needs to cut down and get better at running. He simply wasn't given that time in the midfield just to let his body handle the rigors of the hits in the contest. He has come out and said that as well. So let's go through it. Just 71% time on ground for his very nice 69.5 average. So I can guarantee you that he's going to get that bump in year three. Let's look at as well his splits. 61 in his first 10 games, 76 in his final 12. So he's already pushing up there. And that's not even with huge center bouncer tendencies. He just naturally improved as the year went on. His best scores was in round 18 as well when Fife was missing and he did get that midfield time. And then against the Dogs with Fife, where Fife, Mundy and Walters all had more mid-time than him, but he did play decent time on ground. So you can see when he gets the mid-time or he gets the time on ground or a little bit of both, there's a big uptick in his numbers. We'll truly get to see how... Sorry, Steve, do you want to butt into my debate?
Yeah, it did take three goals to get to the ton in one of those games.
That's fine. That's why he's got that luscious forward status, even though he's going to be a midfielder next year. So it's Brayshaw season, Steve, and I'm sure that you're not as hot as you are in this debate on picking up Buddy. I just don't see it. We've seen a lot of key forwards this year struggle with perhaps the setups or something, but everyone's expecting that uptick again. I just do not see it for Buddy at all. Brayshaw season, I'd much rather a guy that's going to come in and play solid midfield. He's not 33 and he's got the dual position. We love midfielders that play midfielders that have the forward status.
Yeah, no, I understand all the arguments. I just think it's a leap to take him over a guy like Buddy Franklin. Like, we've seen the guys who can get up on their motor and outside 50 and take marks, like you Tom Lynch from Adelaide, good personality Tom, be very relevant in your AFL fantasy formats. It's driven by marks. I think that is still in his range of outcomes. Yes, I know the age. If you want to say he's too old, that's fine. I don't have a beef with that. Yeah, and take him off your boards.
He's too old.
And that's fine, Doss, because, you know, those great players like Paddy Dow, who averaged like 42 last year, they're going to get you some Ws. I think he's going to be better value now than he's ever been before. The last two games this year where he wasn't injured, last year, now it's 2020, the last two games he played that he didn't get injured, tons. They're tons. This guy is just a machine. He is not like your average player.
Yeah, I mean, the only game, like, if you're talking about upticks and stuff, he only had one game that was time on ground affected despite his injury absence. So yeah. He got a 35 against Collingwood, 89% time on ground, 49 against the Western Bulldogs, 80% time on ground. He had the two tons, sure, but you expect him to do that more next season.
Well, he had a 60% against Hawthorn.
Yeah, but that's one game. Like, Andy Brayshaw was getting 60% every game, and he's
going to I'm just saying he came into the year underdone, and as the year he built, he got better. If he comes into the year fresh, he should be fine. I think you're making... this is the thing. Like, Andy Brayshaw has more... I think he has a wider range of outcomes than Buddy, right? Like, what's the best Andrew Brayshaw can do this year, in your mind? What's the absolute tippy-top of outcomes?
Ooh, the tippy-tippy-top.
And then wind it back like 5-10%.
Okay, well, I'd say 90, but 88, say, is probably the absolute max I could see him average.
I would even say 92. I reckon that is absolutely as best as you can get. If Buddy gets back to his best, he's better than that. And it's just fun, man. It's fun having him.
It's fun of winning, Steve.
I get what you're saying. It's just, I don't think Brayshaw's going to do the 92. I think he's going to be more like an 85, 87. Unless Nat 5...
To be honest, Steve, I agree, and I still want that over Buddy. I think the game's played. I think fit Buddy in preseason is tricking people. I don't think this guy can play 22 anymore.
So, if I was to judge who won, and obviously we'll throw to the listeners for this one who won, I'd actually... Steve was very passionate, but I'd side with Doss.
Thank you, Ken.
And he didn't even present the right arguments, but I'll side with Doss.
What's the right arguments?
So the comments around time on ground and that being a negative thing is actually weighs in his favour because he did have a niggle and he wasn't running up the ground. That affects his fantasy output. But if he doesn't have a niggle this year, he's doing that and he's dropping the tons like Steve said. However, I think I actually rate Andy Brayshaw's breakout higher than both of you. I think he's going 95 plus. Either way.
Let's move on anyway. We'll get on to the next battle, and it is the pride of Portland, Rowan Marshall versus Todd Goldstein. Who wants it?
This is fucking rancid. I've got to get some more harvest into me. I've got to get harvested.
I feel like I should have given Steve the win for that one because I would have maybe had an easier time against the pride of Portland. So I've got Todd Goldstein, and... Look, simply, I'm probably going to focus more on Marshall than I am on Goldstein because you kind of know what you're getting with Goldstein. So he's got no competition for the ruck mantle. He doesn't come from Portland. He's safe as houses that he'll average at 88 plus in AFL fantasy and 95 plus in Supercoach, potentially higher in both. He's got a decent range of outcomes. He's done it through his career. I want to focus a little bit more on Marshall. Last year was crazy for him, right? Like, he had the solo ruck role and flourished in it. Some might even say he had the perfect conditions to score well. And with these perfect conditions, he managed to pump out an average of 99 AFL fantasy and 110 Supercoach. Steve, even with those perfect conditions, Goldie managed to beat him in Supercoach. Coming in as the third
We're not talking about Supercoach. We're talking about AFL Fantasy scores.
Is this exclusively AFL Fantasy?
Exclusive, yeah.
Well, let's look at 2020.
That was on the show, Doc, by the way, people. This is not me tricking anyone.
I said it at the top of the show.
Did you really?
Fuck. I did.
I need to actually start listening. So let's look at 2020.
Oh, I've got this one.
Fuck. Nah, I'm going to watch me claw back. This is going to be an amazing come from behind win. Bradbury level win here coming. Now, let's look at 2020 with the addition of Ryder. We've seen across Ryder's career that he can average between 22 and 30 hitouts per game. St Kilda, in total, averaged 31 hitouts per game in 2019 through Marshall, which saw them as the third worst team for hitouts in the league. He's clearly been brought in to improve the stat line and provide a better service to their mids. Steve, do you really... you don't think so?
No, he's been brought in to play forward and give a chop out.
A chop out, right? Yep. Okay, so, and if they average 31 hitouts per game, and that's time around the ball, and the chop out is there for Ryder to go into the ruck, do you really think that it's not going to affect Marshall's score?
Maybe, but it won't affect him to the point that he'll be less valuable than Goldstein.
Do you think it... so, 99 to 88, we've got an 11-point gap between the two from last year. Do you think that it won't be 11 points?
I just want to hear your argument, and then I'll talk about my things, Cam. I see what you're trying to do. You're trying to bait me, and I'm not going for it.
why don't you throw your spit some fire for me, Steve? Because
has your argument gone down the shitter?
No, I'm going to wait until you say some things, and then I'll spit some things.
Okay, so you're talking about a ruckman in his third year. So he's got some growth, right? And you know, look, if we look at the breakout season, he did average the 99 Dream Team. Second half, a lot better, averaged 103. So very nice. And if you want to talk about tons per game, scored 12 tons this year. Very nice. It took Goldie the last 2 years to get to 12 tons, despite having the perfect ruck conditions, as you may well have mentioned, Cam. Did only have the 4 Dream Team tons this year. That can't be good. You know what an 88 averaging ruck is? Replacement level. Not good. Our friend, the Pride of Portland. Yes, you might have mentioned the Ryder factor in, but let's also look at the outs for St Kilda. And when we've got Josh Bruce gone out, Paddy McCartan, a very sad story, retired. King, okay, he comes in, but do we know what he's going to do? He's coming off the knee. So a lot of question marks there. But who are the other forwards? What's going on there? It's just 6 foot Tim Membry. That's their key forward, is it? That's worrying. Do they move Josh Battle forward? I don't know. But it seems pretty worrying. To me, Ryder is absolutely playing forward. He's, 33? We know he wouldn't want to be 33. That spells the death. And let's just talk about Ryder. How durable's he been over the last run? He misses 6 games a year like it was brushing his teeth. And you want to compare him to Grundy. What's the one thing Grundy's got better in? Hitouts per game. Hitouts per game. That has grown substantially. And even when Grundy was playing like with Jared Witts, he was still averaging more than 88. With Mason Cox, he was still averaging more than 88. Like, it's not going to be a thing. Like, Marshall builds his score around the ground. It's not due to hitouts. What, you're going to put him at centre half forward for a little bit where he can get on his bike and just blow up people? That's fine. Like, give him that time. He'll kick more goals, take more marks. Because, good times. Because everyone's focused on 6 foot Tim Membry. I can't see Ryder doing a massive chop out. You're talking about Brett Ratton, who's come from the Hawthorn system, which has employed 2 rucks and still had a 100 averaging ruckman in Ben McAvoy. I really don't see it as a big problem at all. I'm quite happy, and I hope Rowan Marshall slides down draft boards.
So you don't think there's a dip coming?
No, there is. There is. But that's fine, because Goldstein's shit. That's my point. 4 tons.
But how far is the slide?
If he drops 6 points, he's still better than Gold. Well, he can improve. Goldie's not going to improve. He's 32.
Oh, what about Buddy? Is he going to improve?
We're not talking about Buddy. Already lost that one. I'm moving on. It's actually funny. I looked at the way my matchups were lined up, and I'm like, oh, this is... probably not great for me. Probably going to take a split decision here. I usually do myself all sorts of favors, and I usually sweep this show. It's not going so well for me. I'm not looking forward to the next one either. I don't see how it's the thing. Like, he's 12 tons. Like, even if Ryder misses games, like, happy days. Like, you're laughing. Mm. Ryder's not going to be playing like 30% ruck. It's going to be like 20%. It's going to be a chop out at best.
So what's 20% minus?
But you're 99. Not taking 20% off his scores. If you do that, you're saying he's not going to score anything as a forward, which he will.
Yeah, that's fair. I think for me, it'll come down to, like, Goldie probably, I agree with you actually, he won't improve. Like, I think what we saw last year is probably what we'll see until he retires. But I think for me, Marshall will probably regress a little bit more. Like, I seriously see him going about 85 next year.
Oh, that's huge, man. You're doing him dirty. You're doing him absolutely dirty there. You're saying that Ryder's going to affect him more than he can improve, because he got better as it went on. Now you're giving him another preseason.
Yeah.
And St Kilda should be better. Oh, that's crap, man.
I think so. I think it's fine. Where would you feel? We're not talking draft.
Where am I draft? The thing is, I'm not actually going to wind up with Rowan Marshall in any drafts.
Yeah.
I think you may be. I think Steve won because Cam came in underprepared with the super coach factor. But I think, Steve, I do think you are, in my opinion, and you could be, this is just opinion based. I think that Ryder will play a bit more ruck than you're suggesting in terms of the chop out. I think he's going to be affecting certainly his hitouts. And what you're saying about him playing as a really good forward is a good point taken, though, I admit. So yeah. That's something that I've been seriously worried about. But you're right in that he improved as the season went on. And for him to be performing so well as, you know, only, what, 24-year-old ruckman, you know, surely there is improvement, because we know that the ruckmen tend to take a little while to develop as well. So
think about this. If Ryder misses 6 games, that's 4 tons probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, what's our next matchup we've got here? It is Ollie Wines versus Hugh McCluggoat. And I wonder which one I'm going to be taking on this one. But Cam, do you want to take through Wines first, or do you want me to just crush the McClug?
You bring me the suitcase.
I'm genuinely interested in this one. I want to hear some arguments on this one, because I'm genuinely interested.
It's pretty simple, really. Wines is just a guy. He's a jag, okay? He's a jag. Like, they realized they made a mistake putting him captain, so they took it away. We've got...
Such an alpha move. I was just like, yeah, yoink.
So, we've got McCluggage improving every single year and continuing to improve, and I see that going forward, which I'll talk about a bit. Wines averaged a ton once in his career, Cam. And guess what? I'll just bring up a little number on that. You want to know what he averaged that year? He only just skimmed over the AFL fantasy ton. And he averaged 3 hitouts a game that year, Cam. So I'm not even counting that ton. That's a filthy 97, all right?
That's our versatility, Doss.
Get rid of that shit. He's never cracked a ton. He's averaged around the 25 disposals, 5 tackles, a few marks. That's it. That's done and dusted. 90, 95, whatever, okay? That's Ollie Wines in a nutshell. Clugger averaged 91.3 last year, and just a way better score build. Kicks goals, something Wines cannot do. He knows to kick more than handball, something Wines can forget a lot of the time. He's got upside in his disposals, marks, and tackles as well. His numbers are nicely spread. He showed in his younger days that he can basically do all that and lift it up a notch as well, just keep climbing all of those up. And he only turns 22 a couple of weeks before the season. He's got a few more gears to go, Cam, whereas Ollie Wines, he's flat. He's done. That's it. That's what we've seen the best. We've seen what he's got. And it's over. Just wrap it up there.
Oh my god. It's done. Jeez, I honestly thought you were coming in with some. I can't
wait to hear Cam Ellis Prusman argument.
Oh my god. Okay, so 2019.
I'm a bit worried here, Doss, because I thought you were going to win this, and I know where this is about to go.
Deep breath. 2019. Terrible year for Ollie Wines. Just awful. The preseason shoulder injury, the mid-season thumb injury, and then a further injury later in the year restricted him to 11 games for the season. You know, a bit of an anomaly, you could say, because he's generally super sturdy, playing 22 games the 3 years prior. So he came in off basically no preseason to a completely changed game with the 6-6-6 rule, requiring a bigger tank. And lo and behold, he was found out a little bit, averaging just the 93 AFL Fantasy and 88 Supercoach. But we're just focusing on AFL Fantasy. Keep it together, Cam. It really showed in the two return weeks following each injury, slowly building into the game. And then the third week back, bang, 116, 98, 98 before getting injured again. Then returning, he was slow again before the third week. But then bang, 105, 131, and then injured again. And you better believe he had another two-game slow start before going 123 AFL Fantasy in the final game of the year. So far, reports have him completing most of the preseason, and I think he'll be raring to go. Side note, if he is looking for a trade at the end of the year, as rumours suggest, and the reason why he was potentially stripped of that captaincy you were mentioning, Doss, you better believe he's going to want to pump his numbers up to get a better deal wherever he goes. So let's say, and we take it from the top, right? So let's say Wines averages 100, because I genuinely think that's in his range of outcomes. You're probably right, Dawson, that he doesn't go more than that. He's probably a 100 averaging guy, and that's okay. Let's take McLuggage for what he is, predominantly an outside player, averaging the 14 uncontested possessions and 4 marks per game. How many predominantly outside mids averaged over 100 in 2019, Doss, under the new 666?
Well, like I said, we don't need him to average over 100 because Wines has done it once with 3 hitouts. Go on, Ken.
So Wines will do it. If McLuggage was to average over 100 or 100 exactly, he would be competing with Gaff, Whitfield, Duncan, and Kelly. He'd be in the absolute elite of the outside runners. And you think he can absolutely achieve that this year?
Yes.
So he will be the fifth best outside runner in the game.
Have you watched him play, Cam?
Yeah, he's awesome.
But he was 21 last year, and he... Listen to what Matty Lloyd said about him. He was a top 5 player in the AFL in like a year, he said. Matty Lloyd, my boy.
Okay.
Matty Lloyd, your boy?
I find it really... Yeah.
The Velvet Sledgehammer?
I find it really hard to believe that an outside runner is going to do those type of numbers to compete with the inside moves of Ollie Wines. I don't think he can average over 100 this year.
So, Cam, can you let me know who's gone out of the Port Adelaide midfield this year that's going to help Ollie Wines scoring a little bit better next year? Apart from the injury, like you said, his preseason preparation. Is anyone leaving their midfield?
No one needs to. No one needs to leave that midfield.
Who's moving in that midfield, Cam?
Well, I don't know what their makeup is for their midfield.
Dan Houston, Connor Rosie as well. There's people coming in there. He's going to have a bit more competition for those touches, Cam. Like, where is he going to get his extra score build from, though, Cam, is what I would like to know from you. More disposals?
So what I'm suggesting is that he doesn't need to get extra score build. He can do it already. He didn't have the chance to do it in 2019. I think he will get, you know, he'll get his 100 the way that he got his 105 and 131, the way that he got his 116, the way that he got his finally 123 in the last round. Like, he'll get it that way.
Okay, that's your opinion. So my opinion from the Clugger as well is that everything the Clugger did last year, I believe he can easily maintain. There's so much about his game that I believe he's going to maintain. And what are the average? 22 disposals. that's he'll tick that up, man. That, in my opinion, there is just no way he doesn't tick that up.
How many Suns did he get last year, McCluggage?
I don't have the numbers up at the moment.
I do.
Steve, give
me a number. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
That's awesome.
Did like, do it against good teams, though.
Yeah.
Like, no, against Richmond, Geelong, GWS, the Bulldogs, and Sydney. And he had a 99 as well.
He also had an 86 against the Hawks in 60% time on ground, mind you.
He's a gun, right? Like, I think we all agree that he is a gun. But at the same time, Wines had four tons.
Could I just jump in quickly?
Like 11 games.
Could I just jump in quickly? Because something has just stunningly jumped into my memory as well that has made me just so much more hyped. You're talking about injury preparation. The McCluggoat did a string in preseason last year. We were at the game. Me and Jono were at the game. He popped a string. He came back. You can see it in the early season. 67% time on ground against the Weagles in round one for that 92 as well, mind you, Cam. This is a guy that came in off a string in the preseason. Oh, God, my case is so rested. Steve, who are you, the McCluggage or the Wines?
I really wanted you to make a better case, Toss. I really wanted you to win. Your case is shit, though. You had to say this. You had to say this. You had to say McCluggage is so good, they will find a spot for him in the mid, in the inside mid. They will get him more inside time. That is how he wins.
Yeah.
It's like Jack McRae. You go, he's Jack McRae. He is so good on the outside. He's laying four tackles a game. He's taking four marks a game. They will push an old prick out like Jared Lyons. Fuck that old guy. And get the guns in there like the McCluggoat. That is how you will win. Don't worry about this Cam Ellis Yol Jag, okay? Don't worry about him. They moved Berry out. That Cam, Dossie, what are you doing to me, man? That was an easy W. That was a layup, man.
Look, I've been a busy man, right, Steve? sorry, I didn't take it through. I got blinded by my McCluggoat love. But you're not wrong. And to be honest, that was reflective in the CBAs, though. We always saw McCluggoat get CBAs regardless of... You're saying he played a lot of wing, which is completely true, but he still got those centre bounce attendances last year because Brisbane had quite a spread. And it's kind of something that I've been saying in the preseason where I'm kind of a bit more worried about someone like... maybe like a Zorko taking a hit and playing more forward, and guys like you've already mentioned, the guys you've already said, like Lyons potentially moving forward as well. And McCluggoat is one of those guys that will get time. So thanks, Steve, for finishing off that argument. But it was an easy W because Wines is himself, much like Cam Ellis-Yolman, a jag.
I think Cam argued his point better. I like McCluggoat. McCluggoat's got the upside. I don't know if he gets there. Wines is the safer pick. It'll be interesting to see what their ADPs look like.
I kind of thought we were moving away from fence sitting in this episode, though.
Oh, look, you won the argument, Cam. That's the problem.
Yes!
I don't want to give you anything, but I wanted Dossie to win. I'm like, this should be easy.
Not. I'm probably going to struggle with this next one. Then. Our next argument is Michael Hurley versus... Lockie Weller. Steve,
mate,
you've got
this
Hurley.
Give me a
breather.
You, Doss.
I'm still probably going to butcher it, so take it away, Steve.
All right, so look, to me, Hurley is one of the big value picks this year. I really, really like it. He's had a couple of injury-affected games, absolutely burying his 77 in average, which should look more like 82. Which is what Lockie Weller averaged. And the issue with Weller is that Gold Coast have had a horror run with injuries, and they've actually brought in a big-name recruit, Brandon Ellis, who scores in the exact same way that Lockie Weller does. Lockie Weller hasn't shown a great ceiling in AFL fantasy at all. I get the feeling he's more just a role player, just a jag, more than a star, which is fine for him. You know, every team needs those players, the defensive types and all that sort of thing. Wouldn't give up pick two for him, probably, in hindsight. But, you know, like Gold Coast needed players who wanted to be there. And that's where I think, you know, you've got Lockie Weller. You know, he's a team-oriented guy. You can get him to do the defensive things, which isn't great for his fantasy output, hence the low ceiling. And they've brought in guys like Brandon Ellis who can score the outside ball. They get Pierce Hanley back. Jared Harbrow's back. Jack Bowes is back. All these guys who can run off half back and do it pretty well. Not that Lockie Weller can't, but I'm just saying he's the defensive-minded player. On Michael Hurley, Essendon's mark totals absolutely plummeted in 2019. Despite that, Hurley's actually went up. His tackles and disposals did drop. So I think, you know, his tackles can easily come up. He only had 7 for the year. That's the lowest he's had in a long time. He doubles that. It's an extra half, like 2 points a game? Something like that. So I think there's upside if Hooker goes forward, which if you look at the way Essendon is set up, Mitch Brown's out of that team. Danaher, a lot of question marks about his health. James Stewart, sort of don't know where he is. And I think there's going to be some changes with Essendon. They sort of thought they were there, but it's shown they haven't been there. There's a coaching change going on. I get the feeling they're going to mix things up. I think Hooker can, you know, they can try turn the ball over through the midfield more. They need to do that rather than letting it get to the back half. Could lead to some more plus sixes for Hurley. I just think it's a really easy case to make that he gets back to an 85 average. And I think Lockie Weller drops below 80. I really think he's just a total jag. They've brought in more internal competition, unless you think Gold Coast are going to take a leap forward as a team. But they're just full of bad ball users. They don't move the ball well. They don't have uncontested marks like other teams do. They're just a bad team, and that's how Lockie Weller builds his score. There's no way he's going into the midfield with all the guys they've got coming into the team and guys they're coming back from injuries. I really think he's super, super capped. He's going to be completely, well, I wouldn't say he's off my draft board in Dream Team, but I'm going to have him far below where the rankings would, you know, the averages would suggest he would be. I'm not interested at all.
Yeah, not great, Stevie, but it's funny how you talked about his Hurley having an outlier marks season as being a positive. Oh, they dropped in their marks, but Hurley career high mark numbers when he's just hit 30, that's a positive. I thought that was supposed to be a negative thing, Steve, having a career year at age 30. Anyway, but you talk about some of his injury-affected games as well, downing his score a little bit. How about his two best games when he played on James Sicily, who we were just talking about, wasn't he a defender 2 minutes ago when we were talking about him? And he also played against Carlton for his biggest other score. So yeah, not nice one there as well. But he still does get handed those lockdown roles at times that we have seen. And the method, the big thing with Hurley though for me is the method that Essendon relies on getting out of defence. It's through Sard and McKenna. Okay, so if he's going to do it, he's going to have to get his own ball because otherwise it's going straight through Sard and McKenna. Next year as well, they've still got Redmond, Francis, Ridley and Ambrose developing into those intercept players, which they've actually have been improving as well over the years. And I think he's that guy that still just gets those big jobs and, in other words, can go missing. He can have his games against your Carltons, against some of these teams where they give up marks along the back line. But he's the guy that's going to get those big jobs against Buddy Franklin, who's apparently going to have a breakout year at age 33 as well. So he's going to be having to lock him down when they come up against him. Lockie Weller, on the other hand, improved every single year he's been in the AFL. Turns 24 early next year. So he's not an old guy, still improving and around an improving team that was only 16th for disposals per game and 16th for marks per game last year. So if they improve, which I think they can't get worse with the guys that they've got coming in and retain possession better, there's no way that doesn't go up a little bit as well. So there's going to be more ball to go around. And who's to say Brandon Ellis and him cannot share that ball, the extra ball that's going around. So the back line at the Suns as well, they don't revolve around two players running it out. They actually have a little bit more team chemistry there with old Pierce Hanley down there. But I think that is the biggest thing that hurts for Essendon is their game plan as well. And then we also saw Weller last year spend a little bit more time in the midfield in the
final
couple of games.
You
shut up. No, no. So everyone's talking a little bit, not everyone, but people talking about Brody Smith because he actually spent some time in the midfield late last year. Everyone's getting really excited about that. Brody Smith, speed, great disposal, etc. Lockie Weller played in there in the last couple of games and was great. That's when he tunned up, Steve, and laid 12 tackles when he played in a midfield role. I didn't bring it up for the McCluggage one. I'm bringing it up here. Lockie Weller, more mid-time, more upside. No, I think regardless of what happens, he still does have the upside there as well. And I'm just in this situation. I think this is where we're different, Steve. I do tend to pick the guys who I still think have improvement into them rather than hoping that an old player bounces back. And that's probably evident as well what we were talking about before with the Lance Franklin versus the Brayshaw, except in the Brayshaw situation, like you were saying, the jump has to be monumental. Whereas what you're hoping for is for Hurley to not only back up a career high mark here, but improve other areas and I guess hope to sort of have a pretty similar level of marking as well out the back. So that's my case. I tend to pick the higher upside players, and Hurley, 30. Game plan does not revolve around him getting touches at all. It doesn't around Weller either, but he can certainly get his own, especially considering they were 16th in disposal. So, yeah.
Yeah, the only thing with Hurley, like, it's not an outlier. Like, he's gone up half a mark a game, but he's also dropped in other key stats like tackles. Like, he can easily lay half a tackle more across the season. Like, that's not... That's something he's done across his year. It was just outlierishly low. And I think what you've said about Essendon... I'll let you finish. What you said about Essendon's game plan, and I think this is actually plays into Hurley getting more disposals, is I don't think Essendon mean to play off the half back line. I just think they're so weak defensively through the midfield that should be a key focus of where they're going to focus this off season. Like, they'll get Devin Smith back. Noted tackler, noted pressure player. They've got Tip and Woody, noted pressure player in the forward line. I think they can improve in that area, so they'll be able to turn the ball over further up the ground. Should be good for a guy like Hurley to get more disposals, hopefully get another tackle. I really think it's bad for Weller when you bring in a guy like Brandon Ellis. Like, let's say Essendon, like Gold Coast gets 7 more disposals a game. It's because Brandon Ellis is getting 7 more disposals than fucking Jesse Joyce. Like, it's not because there's one going around to all these guys. Like that, I really think he's a trap player, man. I'm really off him this year. Wow. I don't like him at all, to be honest. You would need one, like, and I know Pierce Hanley, fine, he can get injured and all that, but those guys need to be out of that team. I will love Lockie Weller when Jared Harbrow, who I love, being a very good player, and Hanley and those guys, get the F out. We really, I think the X factor is Jack Bowes. We really don't know what to expect from Jack Bowes. I know Michael Whiting, who writes for the AFL, I really respect his work, covers the Queensland team. I think he's the best writer they've got by a long way. He's projecting Bowes in the midfield. I can't see that at all. But if that happens, that would probably play into Lockie Weller having a more successful year than I'm giving him credit for.
Oh, yeah. So you're sort of banking on a bit of competition from someone like a Bowes. Yeah, I think Bowes will potentially move as well, so into that midfield. So I'm thinking that there isn't that much competition for Weller. And the guy like Harbrow, like he regressed last year, and I don't think he's going to be much of a factor, to be honest. And Pierce Hanley, you talk about Paddy Ryder missing games. How about Pierce Hanley? Like, you can bank him for at least 5 to 10 a year.
But look at, like, the Gold Coast key tools. They're shit, man. They're having goals kicked on them.
Yeah, they like had the ball, a few out balls last year in the back line, though, the key tools.
Oh, Rory Thompson.
No, the guy who came in from the mid-season draft, he's like an elite intercept mark.
He was in the mid-season. He's elite, but he came
not
in
mid-season, sorry. What am I trying to think of?
I know who you mean. Sam Collins.
Yeah, Sam Collins.
Come on, man. If he was that fucking good, he wouldn't be in the, you know, draft. I know what you're saying, man, but they were still the worst team. They still couldn't kick a score. Like, they're having scores kicked on them. Like, I wouldn't be relying on defenders rebounding 50. I really think you... Like, I know players can progress, and that's all good, but look at everyone who was missing for Gold Coast. They had nothing back there. You also got Lukosius back there. Who would you rather kick in the ball? Lockie Weller or Jack Lukosius?
Yeah. I think you're overrating some of the, like, the tackles, though, is something that I think is actually potentially not something Hurley can improve. We've seen, like, he's had a shoulder injury. We've seen Tom
Rockley, and that's why his numbers dipped.
Yeah, what's going to make him improve that? It's just something that looks to be pretty consistently not a great thing for him.
What do you mean? He got it happen in like round 17.
I thought they said it was high risk.
It was an operation. They'll fix it. It's fine. I don't know. You know what's high risk?
Rocky.
You know what's high risk? Giving up Andrew Brayshaw to get jag Lockie Weller.
Yeah, I think this one's really interesting, actually. Steve makes probably the better points.
Don't look at my missus in a swimsuit, Cam. Is that what you were waving at?
I was waving at you, Steve. Just at you. Not the swimsuit. Oh, man, I'm in trouble. So I actually think Steve...
You better give me this W, mate. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, you had... So, for me with defenders, especially at where these two will probably get taken, I'm looking for something that's safe, because the risk is on the downside with defenders at this point. It's not on the upside like you have with the forwards when you take them at this stage. So, for me, I think the consistency is probably there with Hurley, and I think he can improve by about, you know, 4 points per game. He's done it for, you know, the last 5 years or 4 years in his career. Should be okay. Weller, his range of outcomes is big. I don't know.
I don't think it is.
Yeah, it's not.
I actually think it really is. Because, no. I mean, there's uncertainty around where he plays. There's uncertainty about where he plays. There's uncertainty about, you know, the impact of the new players in the team. Like, how can you potentially know if he's going to play on that wing and get the tons like Dossie was saying, or if he's going to play off the halfback and be a shit truck? Like, I think that's quite broad. And so for me, you know, I'd probably take the safer bet and say Hurley.
I actually think Hurley has the upside, man. It takes injuries to get there, but Essendon are a key four down on where they were last year.
Yeah, and I actually think, to be honest, your point was really well made about the defensive pressure of the midfield and the effect that that can have on someone like a Hurley. Like, that was an awesome point. And I was looking at Kyle Langford's stats around tackling, and man, that just across the midfield, they were down in tackles this year. They were deplorable, their effort.
And that's why, man, that's why Darcy Parrish is going to... I was really spewing I didn't get to do Darcy Parrish versus Hugh Greenwood. I really think he's going to be better, but I... Yeah.
So sorry, Darcy, giving this one to Steve.
That's right, I'm racking up the L's. Definitely not my strong suit, is master debating. Now, guys, check out the website. Head to thedraftdoctors.com.au for all our preseason content. Plenty to sink your teeth into. We have all our ranks going up there in the near future. We also have a link to the mock draft website coming later on. We have articles up there too, including my hashtag Hype of the Week article, weekly diary looking at the players building the most hype in the preseason. Last week, we had Taron Thomas. This week, I'm leaning towards a little bit of a Ned McHenry. Don't forget, subscribe, leave a rating and review. Hit up thedraftdoctors.com.au. We've got one more, Steve. What?
So we're going to get to the Twitter questions. A lot of people asked us about some players they couldn't spit for their matchups. Russ, Savage or Roberton? He owns Savage in a dynasty league and he's considering dropping him in the hope of drafting Roberton.
Oh, no. I mean, just do nothing. Do nothing is always an option.
Solid points. Yeah, I wouldn't have either of those guys. I'm really worried about Savage. I can't see him as being an ownable player next year.
Yeah.
Ben Latham has a couple. My mortal enemy, Ben Latham. Ed Curnow or Mark Murphy?
I'm Tim Curnow.
Oh, Murph.
Really? I'm Murph.
Murph, yeah, all the way.
And I'm loving the fact that he's going to slide further, Mr. Curnow.
James, Zach Jones or Hunter Clark?
Hunter, easy. Hunter, easily.
Hunter, easy, actually.
Yeah, I would agree. Dan asked Cornelio or Danger. We already did that. It's whoever I argued. Number two, Treloar or Dunkley?
This one's so hard. I found this one really hard. I'm leaning Dunkley at the moment, but I was Treloar until just before we started recording.
And I was the opposite.
Yeah, I think this is a really super tough one. I reckon Treloar's going to drop a few points, but he's a super safe player. If you wanted to go for the super upside, you'd take Dunkley.
I think if push came to shove, I'd take Dunkley.
I think I'd take Treloar if I was in a draft. That doesn't mean I'm right. I know Dunkley's probably got the higher ceiling.
Guess what age Treloar is next year, boys?
27!
You better believe it.
Owen asks, Blakely or Houston?
Houston.
Houston.
That, it's funny how easy that was for me. I was a Blakely truther, but it's becoming harder and harder.
You know what? He could new coach. You never know. But it's
know.
Houston. It's yeah. Houston. Snap Biddy asked, Chera or Brayshaw?
Brayshaw. Chera's. I think the whole Chera's like a the whole thing that people say he's a better player. He's like classier and stuff. But I think that takes a little more time to get the fantasy score out. Whereas
especially
Brayshaw
in a past team, Freo could be sorry. Hey, if you're a Freo fan, sorry, but they could be bad next to you, man. Who will be more irrelevant, Bailey Williams or Marley Williams?
Oh, Marley.
You hate to see it.
It's not Marley.
It's not Marley.
It is Marley.
Jaden Evans asks, Laird or Crisp?
Laird.
Yeah, lad.
Laird. And Mosquito Fleet asked, Riley O'Brien or Jared Whitson? It's Riley O'Brien! Come on!
Yeah, 100% Riley O'Brien.
Yeah.
No one wants Jared Whitson. Come on, not even Jared Whitson.
Next week, we got our top 30 AFL fantasy ranks. Happy New Year. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Draft Doctors Podcast. For more tips and in-depth analysis, head over to thedraftdoctors.com.au.